morning. You are listening to the Mighty Boo, KBOO Portland, just a minute before 9 o'clock. Actually, just a couple seconds before 9. Coming up in a half hour at 9:30, join us for Fight the Empire. Today, host Per Fogering speaks with writer and professor Andrew Bacevich on Obama's strategy against the so-called Islamic State. At 10 o'clock, it'll be Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints. Today, continuing a multi-part tribute to the late Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter Gary Webb with speeches from the archives by Webb and fellow journalists Robert Perry and Martha Honey. At 11 on Between the Covers, we speak with journalist and author Alex Christie about her new book, Gutenberg's Apprentice, a novel based on the story of Gutenberg and his apprentice and the production of the Gutenberg Bible. That is all coming up this morning after we hear from Teresa Mitchell, hosting Press Watch, news you're not supposed to know. That's next on KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Restoring Volcano Country, a fundraising event for the Gifford Pinchot Task Force on Thursday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. The event includes live music, local artists, a live and silent auction, and more, and takes place at Holocene. The Gifford Pinchot Task Force mission is to protect and sustain the Gifford Pinchot National Forest and neighboring communities through conservation, science, and advocacy. Again, that's Restoring Volcano Country, a fundraising event for the Gifford Pinchot Task Force on Thursday, October 16th at 5:30 p.m. at Holocene, 1001 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Sun Lee, KBOO's membership director. Thank you to everyone who called in during our fall membership drive. With your amazing support, we reached our $80,000 goal. We would also like to thank all of our volunteers for doing a great job and for making KBOO a great community and radio station. And thank you to all of the restaurants that provided food. For more information on them, visit kboo.fm/food. We are proud to be your radio station and honored to have your support this fall membership drive. Thank you.
So bring your good times and your laughter too. We gon' celebrate your party with you. Come on now.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
It's 9:03 Pacific Time. You're listening to Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Joining me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, in case you were under a rock yesterday, stocks went down pretty sharply for a while. Mike Whitney writes in Counterpunch, 6 years of zero rates and trillions of dollars of asset purchases couldn't stop stocks from falling sharply on Wednesday. All three major indices moved deep into the red, with the Dow Jones leading the pack, dropping an eye-watering 460 points before rebounding nearly 300 points by the end of the session. Why should you care about the stocks? Well, you shouldn't directly, because you're probably not particularly involved in them if you're not particularly rich. Maybe you've got a few in your pension fund. risk-free assets, he writes, particularly U.S. Treasuries, rallied hard on the flight to safety move, with the benchmark 10-year Treasury yield slipping to a depression-era 1.87% before climbing back above the 2% mark. U.S. financials were the worst-hit sector, taking it on the chin for 9% by midday, while Brent crude was soundly walloped, falling to a 47-month low on oversupply and deflation fears. And skipping ahead, the approximate cause, he writes, of Wednesday's bloodbath was weaker than expected economic data from Europe, which is sliding towards its third recession in 5 years, droopy retail sales in the U.S., and a report from the Department of Labor showing that wholesale prices for producers are edging closer towards deflation, the opposite of what the Fed is trying to achieve via its aggressive monetary policy. But the real trigger for the sell-off was not the dismal data, but the policies that have been in place since the financial crisis of 2008. While the Obama administration has steadily decreased demand by shaving the deficits, which provide vital fiscal stimulus for the economy, the Federal Reserve has been providing trillions of dollars of cheap money to the banks and brokerages. And he writes, on Wednesday, the U.S. government announced the budget deficit fell to $483 billion, lowest since 2008. The result of this 1-2 combo has been not only the biggest transfer of wealth in human history, but also a fundamental breakdown in the functioning of a global capitalist economy. And departing from the text there by Mike Whitney, as I was saying in Counterpunch, I was asking, why should you care? Well, these wobbles point to the inevitable crash, which hasn't yet happened. I was looking at stocks as of 10 minutes ago. They're looking okay. And the S&P was, I think, 1855 or something like that. So it's not continuing so far today, although it could. The reason you should be concerned is that a general crash that would get into bank failures is going to be different this time around. So I want to turn to a blast from the past, something you should remember from 2011. Something that most people don't remember or never knew in the first place, and that is that the Bank of America dumped $75 trillion, that's trillion with a T, in derivatives on U.S. taxpayers with federal approval. This is from October 21st, 2011. It's an article by Avery Goodman in Seeking Alpha, and he wrote, Bloomberg reports Bank of America had shifted about $22 trillion worth of derivative obligations from Merrill Lynch and the BAC holding company to the FDIC-insured retail deposit division. Along with this information came the revelation that the FDIC-insured unit was already stuffed with $53 trillion worth of these potentially toxic obligations, making a total of $75 trillion. Derivatives are highly volatile financial instruments that are occasionally used to hedge risk, mostly used for speculation. They are bets upon the value of stocks, bonds, mortgages, and other loans, currencies, commodities, volatility of financial indexes, and even weather changes. How crazy is that? About as crazy as it can possibly get. But returning to the article, many big banks, including Bank of America, issue derivatives because if they are not triggered, they are highly profitable to the issuer and result in big bonus payments to the executives who administer them. If they are triggered, of course, the obligations fall upon the corporate entity, not the executives involved. Ultimately, by allowing existing gambling bets to remain in insured retail banks and ensuring the shift of additional bets into the insured retail division, the obligation falls upon the U.S. taxpayers and their dollar-denominated savers. And he writes, even if we net out the notional value of the derivatives involved down to the net potential obligation, the amount is so large that the United States could not hope to pay it off without a major dollar devaluation if a major contingency actually occurred and a large part of the derivatives were triggered. So let me put that into English. There ain't enough money in the FDIC to cover this. These derivatives are not supposed to be in there. Somebody got their palm greased, I believe. But now there are $75 trillion worth of derivatives. They've been sitting there for 3 years in the FDIC, and they are going to be the first at the window, you'd better believe it, if there's bank collapse. Now, you've been probably thinking, if you've got money in a bank, oh, I'm covered by the FDIC ever since the Depression. Well, you're not. Not anymore. Bank of America has got a fraction of their multi-trillions of dollars, and so the headline is a little off. It says Bank of America dumps $75 trillion in derivatives. Actually, they dropped $22 trillion, and Other banks put the rest in there, but it's, I mean, they don't have a tenth of that, which would probably be the payout. They don't have trillions of dollars. There are billions. I don't remember how many billions, but there are, certainly there's not $1 trillion even in the FDIC. And so you're not covered. And the moral of this story is, if you're not out of banks and into credit institution, get out. More information from Nick Beams from World Socialist website. Global financial markets experienced a day of violent gyrations on Wednesday amid growing signs that the financial house of cards created by the provision of ultra-cheap money by the world's major central banks may be collapsing. European stocks experienced their biggest decline in 3 years as investors tried to cut their exposure to more risky assets. Concerns are mounting that the European economy is sliding into its third recession since the 2008 financial crisis and that global growth is slowing. The FTSE Euro First Index of the top 300 European shares ended the day more than 3% lower, biggest one-day slide since late 2011. And departing from the text, Tokyo didn't do so well either overnight. Much more on that at wsws.org. And I believe they had some analysis further in the there is a fairly long article. I think you'll want to look at that. As I was saying, get out of banks. What are you doing in banks? You should be at a credit institution. I use, locally, I use Advantis Credit Union. Been out of banks for years and years and really, really glad that I am. They treat you nicer, for one thing. Much nicer. You don't get the fees. They owe so profitable billions of dollars every year in fees that are ripped out of poor people. You won't be paying them if you have a credit institution instead of a bank. Time is 9:12 a.m. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. I'm going to give you some headlines of what's going on in the world. Al Jazeera reports U.S.-led airstrikes have killed several hundred ISIL fighters around the Syrian town of Kobane, the U.S. military has said, but they cautioned that the town near Turkey's border could still fall to the Sunni rebel group. Al Jazeera for a slightly different angle on the news there. The U.S.-led coalition launched about 50 airstrikes on the mainly Kurdish town of Kobane in the past 48 hours, largest number since the strikes inside Syria began on September 22nd. And I want to stop right there and say that keyword here is the town. You can talk about how many ISIL fighters, and everybody hates ISIL fighters because of their beheadings and all this sort of thing, but they're blowing up a town. 50 airstrikes on a town, you think it'll kill some non-combatants, some people who really just trying to get their noodles together for lunch? Yeah. We're paying for it. It's wrong. We set up the whole turmoil there. Now we're blowing up the Kurdish town of Kobane. And it's not as neat and clean as even Al Jazeera's coverage would lead you to believe. But returning to that coverage, John Kirby, a Pentagon spokesman, said bad weather in Iraq had freed up coalition firepower to attack Kobane targets. But he added the situation was fluid, with the Kurdish militia still controlling the town, although with pockets held by ISIL fighters. And then he's talked tough, saying the more they want it, the more resources they apply to it, the more targets we have to hit, end quote. Yeah, tough. Dangerous. Don't know where to start with all that. All right, and inevitably must swerve into Ebola when talking about the news. Commenting on the news from HuffingtonPost.com, one of the latest stories is that there is footage of an American diagnosed with Ebola being wheeled aboard a plane, and the reason it's causing a stir is because a man armed only with a clipboard is seen helping out the hazmat suit clad medical crew. So in other words, departing from the text already, in the video and the photographs you can see those moon suits around someone who's similarly protected. He's being taken out of the plane, and there's a guy with a clipboard, and none of that protection. Returning to the article, Dallas nurse Amber Vinson was being transferred to Atlanta's Emory University Hospital on Wednesday for further treatment for the usually fatal and highly contagious disease. She was taken from an ambulance to a specially equipped jet on a stretcher by a medical team in full protective gear and respirators, and one guy in just his shirt and trousers and clipboard. More on Ebola. New shortcomings emerged Wednesday in the nation's response to Ebola virus. This is from BostonGlobe.com. After it was revealed that a second nurse was infected with Ebola at a hospital here and that she had traveled on a commercial flight the day before she showed symptoms of the disease. The nurse, Amber Joy Vinson, was on the medical team that cared for Ebola victim Thomas Herrick Duncan after he was admitted to the hospital on September 28th and put in isolation. Vinson should not have traveled on a commercial flight, federal health officials said. When she boarded Frontier Airlines Flight 1143... on Monday, en route from Cleveland to Dallas-Fort Worth. One official said Vinson had called federal health officials before boarding the plane to report having a slightly elevated temperature, but was allowed to fly anyway. A second case of Ebola among the nearly 100 doctors, nurses, and assistants who treated Duncan for 10 days at Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital is not unexpected, and they write for days. Federal health officials have warned that in addition to Nina Pham, the first nurse confirmed with the disease, other cases were likely. Observe, this is supposed to be hard to get, this disease, and yet people in moon suits seem to get it rather easily. A little contradiction there. Backtracking a bit to another ongoing issue, the amount of radioactive water near the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant has risen to record levels after a typhoon passed through Japan last week, and that's according to NHK, as reported in RT.com. We're supposed to be too patriotic to pull up RT.com these days. They write specifically, levels of radioactive isotope cesium are now at 251,000 becquerels per liter, three times higher than previously recorded levels, which were already astronomical. Cesium, which is highly soluble and can spread easily, is known to be capable of causing cancer. Meanwhile, other measurements also show remarkably high levels of tritium, another radioactive isotope of hydrogen. Samples from October 9th indicate that there are 150,000 becquerels of tritium per liter in the groundwater near Fukushima. And compared to levels recorded last week, that's an increase of more than 10 times. Additionally, they write, materials that emit beta rays, such as strontium-90, which causes bone cancer, also shattered records with a reading of 1.2 million becquerels, according to the TEPCO utility there in Japan. Of course, departing from that text, all of that is washing into the sea. That pulse slowly heads this way. And it is Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute and volunteers who are keeping track of that. And that's one of those stories that I'll periodically mention because it's ongoing. It doesn't suit the news cycle very well at all. The amount of radioactivity will slowly increase here on the West Coast. We are just barely seeing the tip of that radioactive sludge headed this way beneath the ocean. And it'll be more of a story a year from now and more of a story a couple years after that. Also, in the headlines last week, Washington Post reported that Cuba has sent 165 healthcare workers to Sierra Leone to help that country fight Ebola. That's from Greg Grandin writing in The Nation. Another 296 doctors and nurses, he writes, are scheduled to arrive in Liberia. In addition to West Africa, Cuba is also sending specialists to Nicaragua, though that country has not yet had a reported case, to prepare local doctors and nurses in case there is an outbreak. A less reported story is that the United States actively works to dilute the effectiveness of Cuba's overseas medical assistance, putting its outdated Cold War obsession with Cuba, kept alive by Florida's coveted 29 electoral votes, ahead of the basic health care needs of some of the world's poorest people. The State Department runs something called the Cuban Medical Professional Parole Program, which encourages Cuban doctors, optometrists, and nurses, along with their families, to apply for asylum at U.S. embassies and helps facilitate the paperwork. And he writes, if only the hungry kids from coup-stricken Honduras had such help. The program began under George W. Bush, but continues with Barack Obama and is largely targeted at Cubans in Venezuela. As the West African death toll of Ebola now nears 9,000, it'd be interesting to know if U.S. diplomats in Sierra Leone are dangling the plums of U.S.-level salaries in front of the Cubans, or if they're willing to put the program on hold and let them fight the disease. More on that at The Nation, nation.org, Greg Grandin, G-R-A-N-D-I-N. And before I get into more about Ebola, one more headline item. This is from Radio Havana, Cuba. U.S. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called for an independent investigation into Israel's deadly shelling of a UN-run school during the Tel Aviv regime's latest onslaught in the Gaza Strip. The UN head expressed shock at the devastation during his Tuesday visit to some of the areas worst hit during the Israeli raids on Gaza in July and August, saying, quote, "No amount of Security Council sessions, reports, or briefings could have prepared me for what I witnessed today," end quote. Secretary General also visited a UN school in Jabalia, where tank shells struck two classrooms in July, leaving about 20 people sheltering there dead. He told reporters, quote, "The shelling of the United Nations school is absolutely unacceptable. These actions must be fully and independently investigated," end quote. After meeting several Palestinian officials, Ban Ki-moon described the devastation as worse than any such destruction in the Israeli offensive against Gaza in the winter of 2008 and 9. He said, quote, "This is a much more serious destruction than what I saw in 2009, end quote. He also urged Israelis and Palestinians to resume peace negotiations immediately. More on that at rhc.cu. Dare you to pull that one up. Time is 9:20. This is Press Watch on KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. And I would like to talk more now about Ebola items. There's an article by Manny Fernandez in the New York Times. Part of it says, officials at a school district in Central Texas shut three schools on Thursday after they learned that two students traveled on the Cleveland to Dallas flight with Amber Joy Vinson, the nurse infected with Ebola, the superintendent, the second nurse infected with Ebola. The superintendent of the Belton Independent School District south of Waco said that a student at Sparta Elementary School and a student at North Belton Middle School were on Frontier Airlines Flight 1143 on Monday. The superintendent, Susan Kincannon, said in a statement that officials decided to shut the two schools plus a third, the Belton Early Childhood School, so they could thoroughly clean and disinfect the schools and buses that served them this week. The two students were on the flight on Monday and then attended classes on Tuesday and Wednesday, according to the statement. And though state and local health officials had cleared the children to return to school, their parents decided to keep them home for 21 days, the maximum incubation period of the virus. So that's in the New York Times. And of course, that reflects the fact that everyone who was on the flight now has to be wondering. Since, as I was saying, the official reassurances that you don't have to worry about sitting next to someone on a plane when they don't have full symptoms. Well, it's just so much crap, isn't it? I mean, if you can get, well, obviously at this point, so many people have gotten the disease, even though they've taken great precautions. And there is a question, of course, as to whether this disease is capable of spreading in ways other than has been described. Fortunately, we don't have to depend on right-wing radio commentators to speculate about that. And I am certainly not a right-wing radio commentator. We have information from the Centers for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, or CIDRAP. And they have published an article saying health workers need optimal respiratory protection for Ebola. And this article was published last month. It was published on September 17th. It's by Lisa Brousseau and Rachel Jones, both PhDs. They are national experts on respiratory protection and infectious disease transmission. And they want powered, filtered moon suits, as opposed to the current moon suits, to be used in treatment of Ebola. And the reason is that, well, they say, we believe there is scientific and epidemiological evidence that the Ebola virus has the potential to be transmitted via infectious aerosol particles, both near and at a distance from infected patients, which means that healthcare workers should be wearing respirators, not face masks. That's after they write that the precautionary principle that any action designed to reduce risk should not await scientific certainty compels the use of respiratory protection for a pathogen like Ebola virus. So let me read that other sentence once again. And once again, this is from PhDs writing for the Centers for Infectious Disease Research and Policy. Last month, they said, we believe there is scientific and epidemiologic evidence that Ebola virus has the potential to be transmitted via infectious aerosol particles, both near and at a distance from infected patients, which means that healthcare workers should be wearing respirators, not face masks. That's a quote. And that kind of flies in the face, so to speak, of what we have heard over the last month. It was interesting to me to read this article. Continuing with part of it, they write the minimum level of protection in a high-risk setting should be a respirator with an assigned protection factor greater than 10. I don't know what that means. But they write in a powered air purifying respirator, or PAPR, with a hood or helmet offers many advantages over an N95 filtering face piece or similar respirator, being more protective, comfortable, and cost-effective in the long run. We strongly urge the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the World Health Organization to seek funds for the purchase and transport of PAPRs to all healthcare workers currently fighting the battle against Ebola throughout Africa and beyond. So once again, I'm reading from a paper by a scientist for the Centers for Infectious Disease Research and Policy are saying that the moon suits that you see on the news aren't moon suit enough. We need more of a space suit. A moon suit that has a powered, filtered, positive pressure respirator. And this article, if you want to look at it, it's at sidrap.umn.edu. You can probably find it by using a search engine for Centers for Infectious Disease Research and Policy. And it shows a photograph of someone wearing such a suit. And indeed, it has a little unit around the belt level. And it has a battery and a fan and a filter and blows the suit up so that the air coming in is constantly pressurized and filtered. And I just think that's kind of a gobstopper. There has been a lot of online and published controversy, they write, about whether Ebola virus can be transmitted via aerosols. Most scientific and medical personnel, along with public health organizations, have been unequivocal in their statements that Ebola can be transmitted only by direct contact with virus-laden fluids, and that the only modes of transmission we should be concerned with are those termed droplet and contact. These statements are based on two lines of reasoning. The first is that no one located at a distance from an infected individual has contracted the disease, or the converse, every person infected has had or must have had direct contact with the body fluids of an infected person. This reflects an incorrect, they write, an incorrect and outmoded understanding of infectious aerosols, which has been institutionalized in policies, language, culture, and approaches to infection control. Now, departing from the text, this explains a lot. Perhaps following this, you had been wondering why doctors keep saying this this phrase that you can only get Ebola from direct contact, when obviously circumstances have shown this is not the case. Well, it's because they're repeating the dogma. They're you know, one of the things about, I am in awe of doctors, and so I hate to criticize them, but one of the things that is really, really necessary for getting through a medical education is that you have a powerful ability to memorize. And so what we've been hearing is a memorized phrase that no longer applies. And as I was saying, this article by Lisa Brousseau and Rachel Jones about PhD research on this issue says, and I'll read it once again, there is scientific and epidemiological evidence that Ebola virus has the potential to be transmitted via infectious aerosol particles both near and at a distance from infected patients. So that's kind of the point I want to leave you with this week. And coming up at 9:30, Fight the Empire host Per Fagering speaks with writer and professor Andrew Basevich on Obama's strategy against the so-called Islamic State. Chris Andre at 10:15, Flashpoints, and you're listening to KBOO going out to you via our terrestrial transmitters at 90.7 FM and other frequencies elsewhere, and via the World Wide Web to you and to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Cross Cultural Rhythms at the 40th Avenue Garage, a showcase of music, dance, and spoken word performances all sharing roots in African culture. Cross-Cultural Rhythms will take place on Saturday, October 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the 40th Avenue Garage, 1711 Southeast 40th Avenue in Portland. This is a benefit for the Oboe Addy Legacy Project. Confirmed performances include Ghanaian drumming and dance, South African boot dance and music, multiple spoken word artists, and more. Again, that's Cross-Cultural Rhythms, Saturday, October 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the 40th Avenue Garage in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Where is your radio dial on Thursday afternoons from noon until 2? 90.7 FM is the place to be. Twice a month, DJ Charlie presents the World Beat Connection with the hottest Afro-Caribbean sounds in Portland radio land. Reggae, salsa, soca, New Orleans Afro-funk, Haitian compa and rara, and Antillean zouk share the airwaves with African high life. Afrobeat, Congolese soukous, Malian blues, juju, and South African kwaito, among the other great styles. Traditional and modern expressions are all included. On alternate weeks, check out Top Rankin' Reggae and Dancehall with Shocks of Sheba show, hosted by Teresa and Michelle. Any week, Thursdays at noon is sure to move ya.